I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. Being a good journalist generally means putting aside your own emotions and personal biases in favor of an impartial assessment of the facts. It's a tough challenge sometimes, especially when the facts of a story are stark and the choices they present are urgent. It becomes even harder when you suddenly have an emotional investment in the outcome of a story. That's the situation journalist Mark Hertzgaard found himself in when he set out to write a book about climate change and the ways the world is and is not dealing with it. Right about the same time, he became a father for the first time, and that caused him to see the story quite differently. Hertzgaard's new book is Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth, and it puts his 5-year-old daughter front and center. Mark Hertzgaard, how did becoming a dad change your engagement with the climate change story?
Well, I guess, you know, I'd covered that story for 15 years by then, and I certainly felt engaged by the emotional stakes. I mean, we're talking about an environmental threat that really could destabilize civilization as we know it. But when my daughter was born, it's not just that I became a dad. It's also that the climate problem underwent a paradigm shift. For the first 15 years that I was covering it, climate change was always something that could still be prevented if the world got its act together. And then in 2005, when my daughter was born, I interviewed the chief science advisor to the British government, Sir David King, and he basically shattered that framing of the story. And he said, no, climate change has begun. And because of the inertia of the climate system, we're now locked in to another 50 years of rising temperatures and to a certain amount of very substantial climate change. And that inevitably made me think about the kind of life that my daughter will have as she grows up.
So you spent 5 years researching and reporting Hot. Were there moments that unexpectedly grabbed you as a father that wouldn't have before you became a parent?
Yes, I think so. I live in California, and we are going to lose most of the snowpack above the Sierra Nevada mountains, which is the source of most of our state's fresh water. And when I first interviewed the scientist about that, I walked out of there thinking, oh, my gosh, what is Kiara going to do? What are we going to do to get water for her? And then, of course, being in Bangladesh and looking at the father of a little girl who is exactly my daughter's age, whose village had just been washed away in floods, and you think, wow, this man, he surely loves his daughter just as much as I love mine, and he's got a lot less wherewithal to deal with this problem.
Now, one of the key points you make in the book is that we're already past a point where we can prevent serious disruption from climate change. So you seek out examples of places where people are successfully coming up with ways of adapting and changing the way they do things. You reported, actually, on one of these for this program a couple of years ago in Burkina Faso in West Africa, where you found farmers involved in a local tree planting project. Remind us about that.
Well, that example in Western Africa is, I think, the single most hopeful that I came across while writing Hot. And it's because I think these are some of the poorest people on Earth. They are illiterate farmers. Most of them don't even know the phrase climate change, and yet they're living climate change. And they are using indigenous knowledge to adapt. And small correction, they're not planting trees. They are growing trees. They're too poor to plant trees. But what they do is allow trees to grow up in their fields of millet and sorghum. Mm. And those trees provide shade. Their root systems irrigate the soil so that when rainfall does come, it soaks into the soil. And so we've seen enormous increases in productivity and very heartening decreases in the amount of child malnutrition. And so to me, that's a lesson that if some of the poorest people on the planet can do that much in preparing for climate change, surely the rest of us can do even more.
Now, Mark Hertzgaard, you write, if there's one place you'd want your daughter, Kiara, to live, where they're really dealing with the problem head on, it might be Holland. But this is a country that's mostly below sea level and probably likely to be underwater when Kiara is an adult, won't it?
You're right. Of course, the Netherlands is about 70% of the country is below sea level. But the reason that I would consider having her live there in the future is that the Dutch government is working the problem and they are putting enormous resources into it. And not just the Dutch government, by the way. This climate program there, which is a 200-year plan in the Netherlands,
that's extraordinary.
Is backed and in some ways even pushed by the business community. And so the good news is we know what needs to be done. Not only that, cutting-edge leaders are already doing it in places like the Netherlands, in places like Seattle, King County, Washington, which is by far and away the leader in the United States for preparing for climate change. So we have the models out there. What has been lacking is the political will.
It struck me that the political will seems somehow stymied by the dizzying numbers that you put out in your book, and all the experts are debating these numbers. When does accounting stop, and when does the real work of mitigation begin?
Well, the real work of mitigation has begun in virtually every other major country in the world except for this one. And that's something that is often lost on Americans. We think that there's really a debate about climate science, but every other country has long ago settled the question. And that contrasts so sharply to the United States, and especially in Washington. And unfortunately, most of the U.S. mainstream media has treated climate as a political dispute rather than a scientific one. And they say, well, on the one hand, on the other hand. And that tends to sap the political will that we need to deal with this crisis.
I mean, I hear your frustration, and at times in your book, you sound at times less like a journalist and more like an activist. And I understand you've made a conscious decision to go beyond reporting and writing to directly taking on what you call the climate cranks. Is there something different about this story on climate change, or perhaps about being a father now, that motivated that shift?
I think so. I feel that because of 20 years of covering this, and because of 20 years of watching the scientific debate evolve, and watching the disinformation campaign against science, I feel that knowing what I know and being a father, I cannot pretend that, oh yes, there's truth on both sides of this. There's not. It's because we've spent the last 20 years denying this problem, in the United States at least, that we're now stuck in this terrible predicament for my daughter and the other children of Generation Hot. They are now locked into 50 years of rising temperatures. And so, to that extent, yes, I do want to serve as a kind of a Paul Revere of climate change and try and wake people up to the realities that are going to change our world in ways that we are only beginning to understand.
As journalists and parents, we're always weighing the facts and degrees of doubt and certainty to come up with something approaching truth. How certain are you that the skeptics are wrong and that your emotional engagement as a father is not clouding your judgment?
I'm 100% certain that the science that I'm reporting is solid. When you've got the National Academy of Sciences and its counterparts in every other major industrialized country, and scores of scientific organizations all saying the same thing over 20 years. I think of the line of one of the most famous Republicans in this country, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, former governor here in California, who said, if 98 doctors tell me that my child needs a life-saving operation, and two doctors tell me that he doesn't, I'm going to go with the 98. Mm. And that's how I feel about climate science. As a journalist, to me, that's a pretty easy call.
Mark Herzegaard, the author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
My pleasure, Marco.
You can find links to the National Academy of Sciences reports on climate change at theworld.org. That's also where you can hear Mark Herzegaard's 2009 report on farmers responding to climate change in Burkina Faso. This is PRI,